You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Imagine a world where a major corporation admits its role in an industrial accident that killed thousands on live TV, or where the New York Times prints stories we'd actually like to read. Well, these things have happened, sort of. Andy Biklebaum and Mike Bonanno, two performance artists, have done them, and now they've created a satirical new documentary film in which they take to task any company or government agency they feel has wronged the general public. In their minds, companies like Halliburton, Exxon, and Dow Chemical have a choice to do the right thing or what best serves their bottom lines. Biklebaum and Bonanno both directed and star in The Yes Men Fix the World, which opened on Wednesday at the Film Forum on West Houston Street. I'm very pleased it has brought them to our show today. Hi.
Hello. Hi, Leonard.
You're both used to being interviewed and conducting interviews, but you generally don't do them as yourselves. So you do them in characters. So are your real names Andy Biklebaum and Mike Bonanno?
Pretty close.
Same
well,
letters.
I do have other names spelling. Here. I do have other names here, which
the problem
I suspect
is,
are the real names. But under the circumstances, if you're using fake names, how much can I trust what you say during this segment?
Well, the thing is, if we told you our real names, you would never believe them. They're too ridiculous.
But you can trust 100% anything we say, absolutely. Uh-huh. Guaranteed.
On this one?
Guaranteed, absolutely on this one, yeah.
For those who don't know, who and what are the Yes Men?
Well, what we do is sneak into big corporate conferences as giant companies that are killing the planet in one form or another. So, for example, in the film, you'll see us sneak into a catastrophic loss insurance conference on the U.S. Gulf Coast as Halliburton and present Halliburton's solution to global warming, which is to save the richest of the rich using a giant 6-foot grub suit.
Now, you have to convince them to let you speak and do a presentation.
Yeah, that usually takes a little of what the hackers call social engineering, which other people might call sort of lying or conning. But, you know, it's kind of telling white lies in order to get at a broader truth.
Do you have a guiding philosophy? Have you written up a manifesto or, in the modern way of doing things, issued a mission statement?
Common sense. Yeah, it's just the philosophy that's guided us for the last 30, 40 years is absolutely insane. It's let the rich do whatever they want, and things will work out for all of us. It's bonkers, and we've just got to think again and come up with a better solution. This is the 21st century, and it's time for thinking things through.
But there have been people who have done this in the past. The Dadaists did it. The Provost used to do it in Holland. Were you inspired by them?
Absolutely. I mean, we both kind of came to this initially not necessarily having that much historical background, but along the way, you know, people start telling you about these different resources you should look at, and, you know, we're definitely influenced by the things around us and the things we learn.
What was your first prank? Did you do the you probably did them before you knew each other.
Yeah, I mean, I think we both grew up in the American suburbs, kind of feeling that you know, we had to do something, and we grew up doing a lot of, you know, typical childhood pranks, and then as we got older, we just kept doing them, and we're still doing them, and they're hilarious.
Aiming them at corporations at a certain point as you got older?
Yeah, I mean, strangely, you know, we were aiming them at corporations when we were in high school. We just didn't figure it out until later, you know, but, like, for instance, there's nothing but McDonald's that we could go to within, you know, reach of our house. So you'd go to McDonald's, you'd dress up as Ronald McDonald, you'd demand your hamburgers, you know, you'd bring your friend in a bag and he'd groan, you know, those sorts of things that just interrupt the fabric of the normal reality that everybody expects in McDonald's. So it's just sort of revolting against the monotony originally of consumer culture, and then eventually getting more sophisticated about it, understanding why.
Andy, or is it Jacques, when the film begins, it's morning and you're walking down a street in Paris. Mike is filming you and you're reciting a part of a speech into the camera. And then the camera cuts to you sitting in front of a green screen. Mike then says in a voiceover, "Andy is about to go on live television in front of 300 million people. He's about to tell a really big lie, which unfortunately is going to wipe $2 billion off one company's stock price." What's really happening here, and what is about to happen?
What's about to happen is that I'm about to announce, as Dow Chemical Corporation on BBC television in front of 300 million people, that Dow is going to do the right thing in Bhopal.
Now, Dow took over Union Carbide, which was responsible for the explosion that killed so many people in Bhopal, India.
Right. In 1984, a Union Carbide plant exploded. 20,000 people died over the next few weeks. And even today, nobody's cleaned up the site or compensated the survivors. And when a friend of ours who was very active on this issue approached us in 2002 and said, look, Dow Chemical has just bought Union Carbide. It's time to pressure Dow into doing something. They're a very wealthy company. They could easily do something, and it would set a global precedent. We were like, okay, yeah, let's try to do something about that. So we set up a website and waited for an invitation to come. And then a week before the 20th anniversary of the Bhopal catastrophe, the BBC stumbled on our site instead of the real Dow site.
And they took it as legitimate.
Yep.
And at one point during the interview, you say that this public apology was the first time in history that a publicly owned company of anything near the size of Dow has performed an action that is significantly against its bottom line simply because it's the right thing to do.
Yep. And it would have been. It would have been the first time that a company had done the right thing, even though it would cost its shareholders money. And in fact, we found that when the world thought this was true, Dow's stock price plunged $2 billion.
Well, didn't a lot of innocent stockholders lose a lot of money because of your prank?
Not really, because, of course, the stock price bounced back up again once the world found out that it was a hoax. And unfortunately, you know what that means. It's kind of like a laboratory in which we've accrued some evidence that doing the right thing necessarily can mean that the market will punish you. And so, you know, that with that kind of logic, that kind of the market basically acting as a rogue element against what our sense of ethics and morals should be, we should really set off some alarm bells and say, okay, why should we let the market lead our moral and ethical imperatives?
Not long after you both went to India, did people know who you were and what you'd done?
Yeah.
And were they pleased about it?
Well, you'll see how pleased they are when they strangle us in the film. No, we got them to do that. I guess I shouldn't have given that away. There was so much tension. But yeah, no, they knew exactly what we had done and why. Of course, we went on the BBC as Dow and said, we're going to do the right thing. They thought it was true, and they were disappointed after an hour that it wasn't true. But when they saw that we had gotten 600 articles written in the U.S. press about the issue that they're trying to bring to the fore, they were thrilled.
My guests are here under the names Andy Bichlbaum and Mike Bonanno. They are two performance artists who are responsible for a number of actions against companies like Halliburton, Exxon, and Dow, and now have a film that they've directed and starred in called The Yes Men Fix the World. It opened on Wednesday at the Film Forum on West Houston Street. This wasn't the first time that you'd posed as someone from Dow, was it?
No, we'd also... we have a bit of a history with Dow, and... We received an opportunity to attend a banking conference in London where we unveiled Dow's acceptable risk mascot.
The name of the lecture was Risk, Reality, Reason, End-to-End Standards and Acceptable Risks.
Yes, that's right. It's a bit opaque, but basically what we did is we said that any risk was acceptable so long as there was a profit, and we unveiled a golden skeleton, who we called Gilda, in a big puff of smoke. And surprisingly, the bankers actually kind of embraced Gilda. In fact, they literally did that. They came up for photos afterward.
It's kind of odd that they wouldn't see through this, especially since, Andy, you're using the name Erastus Ham.
That's a nice name. they saw through it in a way. They saw that what we were saying, they understood exactly that we were saying that any amount of death is okay as long as you're making enough money. And they actually repeat that, And one of them says, yeah, I thought that was refreshing.
Do you find it difficult to stay in character when somebody is saying something like that to you?
Not really.
Because on the other, there's got to be a side, they're saying, wow, I can't believe that they bought this.
Yeah, of course.
And they're saying these awful things.
Yeah.
I kind of liken it to being in a train wreck or watching a train wreck. You know, if you're watching it, you can, in a movie or something, you can have some anticipation, you know, that the train's going to run into something. But it's a very different experience actually being there in the train. So we don't laugh. We don't, yeah. It's
Mike, or is it Igor? In a recent Huffington Post column, you and Andy...
I told you wouldn't believe it.
You and Andy write about the film, Wanting to Rise Up Isn't Enough. A cinema isn't a town hall, popcorn isn't paving stones, and change doesn't come from people sitting together in a dark theater. Is that your criticism of Al Gore or yourself?
No, I mean, it's basically a call to action. Mm-hmm. That's what our movie is about.
So you want people to really rise up after
yes,
they see the film?
Yes, and in fact, that's what's been happening. The first night, the opening night at Film Forum, a whole group of people got up, and they were angry with J.P. Morgan Chase because they're the last big bank that's invested in mountaintop removal. They've invested in Massey Energy. They bankroll the mountaintop removal industry. And so this audience was riled up by Rainforest Action Network activists. They got up. We handed them lumps of coal. And they went to a Chase bank, and they basically put coal in their stocking. They put coal all over, wrote messages to Chase. And then last night, an audience got up and went over to Whole Foods and did a special performance in relation to the CEO Mackey's responses op-ed piece about healthcare.
Yeah, 150, basically the entire audience. We lost maybe 10 people on the way. We went into the Whole Foods and sang Hey Mackey for them. There was a drum. There were like 10 of the survivaballs were in there from the film, these giant grub suits. And we just danced around the Whole Foods for half an hour.
In another case of impersonation, you both went to New Orleans a year after Hurricane Katrina to attend the Gulf Coast Reconstruction Conference. What were you posing as?
There we were posing as the U.S. federal government, the Department of Housing and Urban Development. We promised them the secretary of the department, the head honcho. And the conference was so excited about this that they told the governor and the mayor, who both showed up as well, to rub shoulders. They were a bit disappointed when I was there instead, but I related some really excellent news, which was that the Department of Housing and Urban Development was not going to demolish perfectly good public housing. Just seems really obvious to us.
There's very good public housing in the middle of New Orleans that was not really affected by the flood, but the flood has been used as an excuse to knock it down so that they could put fancier housing there?
That's right. That's exactly it. Mixed income housing is what they call it. And about 10% of the residents can come back and live there. And
so
the
what
rest
happened?
Is just market.
Well, Ray Nagin, the mayor, is part of this plan, even though he is an African American. Did he say anything? Did any of the people at the conference say anything to you about this?
Well, no.
A thousand contractors who were in the audience applauded, though. They were actually excited because even though they're doing the bidding of the government and the top guys in private industry, these contractors aren't really excited about knocking down perfectly good housing when New Orleans is in such desperate need for it. And a lot of them showed up to the barbecue that we had afterward that was sort of the mock opening of public housing, and they testified to how quickly they could turn around and fix those buildings.
But what has happened? Have the buildings been knocked down anyway?
Yes, yeah. They have. That's why we need to put pressure on government now to do things like provide adequate housing in New Orleans. And to, you know, mm-hmm. It's not just New Orleans, but on questions even bigger and more massive like climate change.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. At the time, of course, Bush was in office. So it wasn't really surprising to us that they would just go ahead and knock it down. That was the overall feeling in the country. Now we're in a completely different situation. And it's really now when people have to vote with their feet and follow up on having gotten Obama elected.
Well, a listener asks on our show page, what do you think about all the people who march and take to the streets to oppose the G20, war and corruption? In some cases, for example, some of those anti-G20 and World Trade Organization protests have led to violence, haven't they?
It's cumulative. And the more it's in the news, the more we read about people taking to the streets and demanding that our leaders do what we elected them to do, the more pressure they will have to do it. And the more they'll be able to resist the industrial pressures that are affecting them all the time. So we just have to keep it up. It's what ended apartheid. It's what enabled civil rights legislation. It's also what enabled the New Deal, which is the basis of everything that we consider civilized in our society, basically, what little health care we have.
You're not calling for dismantling the New Deal? As so many have?
Strangely, no.
What about privatizing Social Security?
Oh, that sounds great. Yeah. Can't wait for to reach retirement with that in place.
Meanwhile, the film is running at the Film Forum for how long?
2 weeks. And this weekend is when people really have to go see it so that it spreads out across the country. It's the weekend box office average that matters.
And, oh, is that true?
Yeah.
This is the equivalent of television ratings?
Yep.
And by the way, it's supposed to rain tomorrow. Come to a matinee.
Yeah.
Don't wait for evening. We're going to be there. We're going to be at every single
screening this weekend, and we're going to give free gifts. And if you go and it's sold out, if it says sold out on the website, it's not really sold out. It just means they've sold 100 of 150 tickets. If you get turned away, we'll give you lots of free gifts. Anything you want.
Andy Bickelbaum and Mike Bonanno. Their film, The Yes Men Fix the World, is at the Film Forum on West Houston Street, running for another week and a half. And I want to thank the two of you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you, Leonard.
Thank you very much.